Every time our athletes walk into this weight room, they're going to be pushed to the max.
Let's go!
The barbell hasn't changed in over 100 years. I can take a 25-pound plate, and we'll go out on the turf, and I'll have you hating life. We talk about straining your gut, pushing past that comfort level. I want a lot of energy.
What better breeding ground is there for being a success in life than the weight room?
Hey guys, welcome back to Iron Game Chalk Talk. I'm your host, Ron McKee, for you, and this is episode number 214. I want to thank each of you for listening each and every week. I appreciate those of you that share, like, comment, and leave ratings and reviews on iTunes. That helps us just spread the word and continue to make this a great resource for coaches around the world. Also want to thank our sponsors, and specifically Samson, for sponsoring this episode. I only partner with companies that I believe in and use and trust, and Samson is a shining beacon of that. This week, super excited to have Keenan Robinson on the show. Keenan's the high performance manager for USA Swimming. He has coached the elite of the elite, specifically in swimming, but he's just an all-around great guy and a friend that we've developed a great friendship over the last couple of years, and just truly appreciate what he does and how he does it. And excited to have you on the show, man.
Thank you very much for having me, Coach. This is just a wonderful opportunity. I've told you a million times, your podcast has influenced me so much, and it's such a great asset to the industry. And I just hope that coaches throughout the country and throughout the world really give you the praise and the compliment that you deserve for making this industry better.
No, I think I appreciate that, man. That's exactly why I do it. I feel obligated to give back because so many coaches have poured into me, and this is just my way of doing it. So I appreciate that. Hey, man, I want to get into just kind of your experience. I mean, you've been at Michigan and then North Baltimore Athletic Club, you know, and ASU, Arizona State, and then now with high performance out at USA Swimming. Which one of those experiences kind of best defined you? I mean, where did you grow up as a coach? What's kind of really led you to where you're currently at?
Yeah, I think for sure my experience at the North Baltimore Aquatic Club molded me, redefined me, forced me to sharpen my skills. Because at the university setting, you just got more resources. You got more of an opportunity. And I think, I've heard it said so many times, like until you've had to have 30 to 50 kids in a session in your weight room at one time, like you really haven't coached, right? Because it is forcing you to move around and to on the fly, get that interpersonal interaction. And, you know, at North Baltimore, we had kids 10 years old. So just learning how to swim, and, you know, long-term athletic development is kind of a hot topic, trendy topic right now. And then we had the very, very best of the best, and each one of them has different needs as an individual or as an individual group. And the other funny aspect of it is I had to build my weight room. So when I got there, we had a shopping cart full of medicine balls and jump ropes, which is enough, you know, for that younger group. But you know, when you got grown men, grown women, they need to get under a bar and you know, they need to get after it. And so what we did is we took an old, if you've ever been to an outdoor pool, you know, they have those big wooden pavilions for people to sit under in the summertime. Well, we cleaned that out and we put old pool covering as tarps. And so those were my walls. And then I had space heaters on each side. And so, you know, over time, you know, whether it was on Craigslist or, you know, different companies, Elite FDS hooked us up, pretty nicely, gave us a huge discount. And, you know, we finally got to the point where we had five racks in there, and we just had to be creative with space. We had to be creative with the people that we had, because the system I came up with was dollars per usage. So if I was given $500 by a parent or a donor to go get a piece of equipment, you know, I didn't always just look like what was best for Michael or for Allison or for Chase, man. I wanted to see what was going to be able to impact everybody down the line. So that bar, man, a lot of hands touched it over the years. So for sure, my experience in Baltimore was what kind of defined me or created me.
Well, I think, you know, if you really talk to the great strength coaches and the ones that are out there, they'll, you know, that are at the places that everybody wants to be at, the Michigans and the Tennessees and the things like that. I mean, you had every tool imaginable. But if that's your only experience, then you really don't know how to go into a setting where you have limited resources and have to be creative. And so, you know, thank God for my, you know, little 2,000 square foot weight room at South Florida, or my 3-car garage over in NFL Europe, because I mean, that forced me to think outside the box, and consistently doing that throughout my career. And that's incredible. And then for those that, you know, aren't familiar with North Baltimore Aquatic Club, I mean, the best of the best have come out of there. And to think that they're training under a pavilion with swim tarps up for walls is incredible to think about. You know, as you're going through that process, you've made probably lots of mistakes. I mean, you know, you're working with a variety of athletes, you're working with the best. You know, what was one of the biggest mistakes you made, and kind of how you learned from it?
Taking myself too seriously, right? Like, you get to a certain point where you've had some level of success, and usually that's just measured by wins and losses, or in our case, medals. And, you know, you get to that and you're like, oh, we're on a hot streak. You know, we've had Olympians, we've had national, you know, junior national champions, we've had kids go to collegiate level. So we're running hot, man. So my program is about me. And then I think about 2010, 2011, you know, I realized, man, I'm doing this and my approach is for the wrong reason. And kids are turning off, you know, kids are not buying in anymore, because you're just saying, well, I've done this, we've had success, you got to do it. And instead of listening to them. And I think right around then was when our 10 to 18 year old, or 10 to 16 year old, like our true long-term program, that's when it started to really take off. And I was like, man, well, you got to think outside the box, and you got to really hone in, like, what are we trying to do? And is what we're trying to do commiserate with what the coach is trying to do? Because, you know, you've said it a million times, if you try and fight the coach, you're going to be unemployed.
Right.
Right. Or if you try and fight the coach's favorite athlete, you'd be unemployed. Right. And so they may say, like in the swimming world, it's common, like it's a common practice still, that on Tuesdays and Thursdays, you're going to do an hour straight of different sit-ups and sit-up variations. And, you know, with my sports medicine background, I was like, man, we're I don't know what we're getting out of this, but right. you can't fight it. So then how do you structure it a little bit more so that they just want something done for that period of time that maybe accomplishes the goal of having good abs or a strong core, right? So then you present to them, like, you slowly add it in, right? You take one exercise out, you put one in, but you do it with their, and then just, is it working?
Right.
And I think, you know, in our sport, it's the most difficult thing to really quantify of what we're doing in the weight room translating to success in the water. And we don't have those measures. And, is the coach happy with the way they look when they get to the blocks before practice? And are the kids happy with the way they feel like their body's changing, evolving, and adapting? So,
right. Yeah, I often say that, you know, at my early years at South Florida, I probably did 20% of what I wanted to do and 80% of what the head coach wanted me to do. And then over time, I was able to flip that to, you know, in 10 years, it was 80% of what I wanted to do and 20% maybe what he wanted to do. And then 100% at Tennessee and 100% at Eastern. But I mean, it comes over time. And part of that is giving way to, I mean, you worked with a phenomenal swim coach there, and sometimes their experiences, you know, you come to find out, hey, you know what, that actually makes some sense, you know, and when you're young and, you know, just kind of pull it full of piss and vinegar, you want to go, but sometimes there is some takeaways that can be done there. So I'm glad you said that. You know, you mentioned your dual background kind of as a, you know, in sports med and strength and conditioning, and you're one of the, you know, the guys that I've always kind of looked to as a good example of that, a really strong blend of those two areas. You know, talk a little bit about how that's benefited you and maybe some of the things that you've seen around the country where you're like, can't we all just get along, you know?
Yeah, right. Because we kind of say that now. The another kind of catchy word in our industry is like these performance teams or an integrated model, and we always say we're all there for what's best for the athlete. But when we really get into our offices, or when we get one-on-ones with the athletes, are we truly trying to sell what we do is the most important piece of the puzzle. Where, I mean, the deal is, it's like what they do. If they're football players, it's what they do to have, like what Nick Saban tells them to do is going to be the most important thing, right? And so, you know, starting off with just an ATC, so many of us in the athletic training profession, we get a CSCS, but it's just credentials next to our name. Like, do we take it any further and train ourselves,
right?
You know, and say like, hey, we had to know this, you know, we had to know the Prilipin charts in order to pass question 53A on our test, right? But what does that really mean? And what does it mean in the grand scheme of the sport preparation, so the actual practice setting? What does it mean in terms of the dosage of rehab or functional exercise, whatever, you know, corrective exercise, whatever you want to call them, like all of its load, right? And we're just trying to push adaptation. And so I thought, like, man, like we're a train coming full speed ahead in all these different domains, and we're just colliding and we're having crashes, you know? And so how can I merge both those things so there's not a separate entity and there's just not more time on these student athletes or postgraduate professionals' plates where they've got their hour worth of strength and then they got their hour worth of rehab and then they got their 2 hours twice a day of their sport preparation? Like, how do I minimize what's being asked of them so they can just shut down, you know, and regenerate.
Right.
And, you know, in Baltimore, like I said, there was not much. And so it was a one man island, but thankfully because of the athletes we had at the top level, you know, we had some access to some USOC providers. And so, you know, when it came to sports psychology, like I'm not clinically certified to take a kid in a room and break them down. Like,
right. Sure.
And I don't have time. Like we got 210 kids I have the conversations, and so then I hear stuff or I see personality traits, but that's where you hand off and the guy takes it to the house, right? Otherwise, you know, you're just trying to throw the short dumps and they're shutting you down, right? And so I just think those things really allowed me the opportunity to figure out, like, there's only 24 hours in a day and you're only one person, Kian. So assemble a team and, like, be happy, you know, if the athlete thinks, like, hey man, like, I got my head straight. I got corrected in my, you know, my psychology, and that's the biggest thing that led to my success. Cool. Like, I just want you to succeed.
Right.
So that's kind of how I approached it.
Yeah, I think exactly what you said early on. I mean, going and getting an under the bar mentality and truly understanding the strength and conditioning side, the performance side, made you a better trainer and being a great, you know, and from a strength and conditioning perspective, understanding the, you know, the sports med world and all that encompasses, made you a better strength coach. And I think that's often the missing ingredient, is the mutual respect for what other people do. And I mean, I can't do what an athletic trainer does. I don't have that kind of empathy, you know, just personally, you know. And so, you know, to me, it's like, man, I thank God I got you on my team. Now let's work together on how we can make this the best deal. And the mentality, you know, the approach that I always took is, look, I'll listen to you from a medical perspective any day of the week, as long as you're coming in the weight room and you're learning what I'm doing and why I'm doing it. And you know, and I think that's the give and take. That's got to be the rub both ways. It's got to go, you know, I got to come into the training room and learn about what's going on there as well, and communicate and understand the injury and the return to play protocol. So it's a silly
you gotta train yourself, right? Like, what do we always hear? Like, I'm sure you heard it. It's just being a strength coach. It's so many of the prestigious places you've been, right? Like, the physician or whoever it is says, oh, you're back squatting these guys too much, and that's injuring their backs. Well, okay, have you trained and have you lifted? Have you squatted? You know, for me, like, once I started getting after it and trying to, you know, push some pretty high numbers, you know, I was like, my back's sore, but it ain't because of my back. It's because of my hip.
Right.
You know.
Right.
Or because I lived, you know, my high school days in high tops, you know, so I don't have the ankle mobility.
Right.
That's where they all blend. And so, you know, then you're not picking fights of, like, no exercise is bad. Right. It's oftentimes the way it's taught, or are they ready to get under there and doing it? You know,
if
they were up till 4 a.m. studying because they're double majoring at Michigan, like, they're just central nervous system shot. And so instead of saying, like, oh, the strength coach hurt them, or the athletic trainer is, you know, he doesn't want them to really work hard. Like, let's find a way to work together, because at the end of the day, like, if this kid succeeds and they win, both you and I get pats on the back from the AD, right? So that's both what we want.
No question. Well, you talked about your new role with USA Swimming. I think it's actually a new position, isn't it?
They've never had anybody that's got a medical background or even like a performance from outside the water. We've got tremendous people that were former coaches that are working here, that were former swimmers and then picked up a master's degree in some sort of like sport performance, so
right.
Biomechanics. And so we've got the kind of the meat and potatoes dialed in, but to have an understanding of the other domains that go into gold medal production is awesome. I just commend Frank Bush and our late Chuck Wilgus, who's our executive director that passed away about a month ago, but for kind of seeing that and saying like we can get better by keeping up with the way the models kind of work in all the other countries. Like if you look at Australia or China, they kind of had those types of models. And so
right.
Again, it's just like, hey, let's all work together. And dude, I don't know the perfect tempo or race strategy for the 200 butterfly. I've seen it,
right.
Kind of seen the best do it, but
right.
I just kind of stepped back and let the coach and the athlete do it, but there was other stuff that I kind of helped to that model. I think that's really where we're getting in, and we can kind of focus teams' needs based on their individual requests.
Well, you kind of mentioned kind of what the role is, where you're kind of coordinating multiple disciplines within USA Swimming, but what are some of your goals with the position? I mean, I know that you're reaching out to college programs and AAU programs and things like that to really start to kind of have this long-term athletic development model that kind of that pinnacles at, an Olympic Games athlete.
I mean, the ultimate goal is just to continue to make our best coaches' jobs easier at developing the best swimmers. And it's, I don't mean to sound like the ugly American, but we're the United States of America. We show up to Tokyo, like I don't want to hear anybody else's national anthem but ours.
Right, sure.
And I just think, from our collegiate system, from our club system, and now from our postgraduate system, whatever we can do to make the coaches' jobs easier to coach and coach being 90% of what they have to do, I think that's gonna take stuff off their table, and so they don't have to worry about why are kids getting sick always and why are we struggling as a country in particular events, like why haven't we broke through on the podium on a consistent basis for these events? So what questions need to be asked that we didn't know we needed to ask, so that
right.
we can get the answers we didn't know we needed? And because I firmly believe that, like we've got the best coaches in our decentralized system, so having coaches from all over be able to implement their seasonal plan and their particular approach is what makes us unique. Because if we were just everybody did the same thing, then if something went wrong in that planning or that presentation, then we'd really be struggling.
It's one of the things that I've always loved about, I've had several different coaches from the Olympic teams or different Olympic programs come on the show. And I mean, to a man or to a woman, it's always, this driven, goal to medal. I mean, it's like, if you don't, if you're in the weight room and you haven't medaled, then you have no street cred, it's you're going to be the best. So I just love that mentality that, it's always going towards, taking, just that competitive, fire to excel. And I think that's something that's unique as well. You'll never say it. And, I mean, I know you do say it occasionally when you're forced to, but I mean, you've coached maybe one of the highest profile athletes that we've ever had in our country, in Michael Phelps, and other Olympic gold medalists and medalists. And what kind of changes did you have to go through? I mean, you worked, what was the age that you started working with Mike?
So Michael was 19, and I was fresh out of grad school. I was 24, so 2024, right? And so I didn't swim growing up. I didn't follow the sport. It was like this was a job at a great institution.
Right.
Put in your work for a couple of years and go to the sport you want to go to.
Right.
And he was just coming off of his second games, Athens, and a pretty good one. I think he won 7 medals there. but I didn't know anything about him. I didn't know anything about the sport. And so I think that's what really grasped me, is that these guys were so – they knew, like, to a way more extent than any other athlete population I've ever worked with, like, the physiological demands, like, the requirements it took to get to the highest level. And so I was like, these guys are almost like physiology professors and biomechanic professors. And so dealing with injuries, it was like, oh, this is how you rehab a shoulder. And they're like, yeah, that's great. But it's not how our shoulders work. Or, right. And then when you started getting into the weight room, then it was like, you know, like we like to see people push weight. Right. And, but we don't, we're training. There is no off season. We're training all the time. And so, you know, you're getting after a pretty heavy intensity volume cycle, and they don't like you. And it's because they can't swim. Right. Like, they're like, it really helped, like, me understanding, like, there's a time and place for this, but just strategically place it, because they like doing it too, but they don't like it if they're practicing slow, because it starts to wear on them. And so it just kind of evolves throughout the years. And Beijing was a pretty successful games. And then you had that quad between Beijing and London, where it was just like, throw seasonal planning out the wow. window. Cause if we got them to show up 4 out of the 6 days of the week, we were high fiving ourselves. And, he always talk about, like, whether it was Bob Bowman writing this like perfect swim practice for him, where I was like, man, I got this great 3-week cycle for him. And we'd start off day one, we'd come out, we'd walk on the pool deck, and he wouldn't show up. And he was like, we called it shoveling, because it was like walking onto the deck and getting hit with a shovel every day. So then it was like, okay, what things does he need that give us the best shot at, you know, faking it, or giving him, you know, just if he's going to show up, what can we do to get the most out of him? And so it was really creative, and it forces you to be not so rigid, where, you got to do your strength endurance phase, you got to do your hypertrophy phase, you got to do your power phase, and right. then your peak, you know, like, throw that out the window. You got to do, like, hey, dude, like, you're here. Are you coming tomorrow? Because if you're not coming tomorrow, then I'm going to put you in the hole, and let's have that conversation.
Right. Right.
Nope, I'm not coming tomorrow. I'm going to Atlantic City, you know? So it's right. like, cool, let's get after it. And then also understanding, like I said, like, not, that's where I really, like, don't take yourself too serious. And I told you this story one time, where it really kind of hit me and impacted me. It was when Joe Ken House was talking about when he was training Steve Smith. You know, that guy's going to be wearing a yellow coat in 5 years. You know, he's going to be in Canton. But when he was training him at Utah, he was like, we would have to hide his helmet in the weight room so the guy would come in and do at least like 30 minutes of exercise so that we could go to the coach and say, hey, he's training. But at the end of the day, that dude just had the gift. And it's the same thing with Michael. Like, I never tried to force anything upon him that he wasn't ready to do. And, you know, people sometimes early on were like, you never yell at him. You know, you're not teaching him mental toughness. And I was like, this dude's got 5 suitcases full of Olympic medals. Like, you tell me he's not tough. He doesn't know what it needs to take to at the highest level. And if I break him,
right, no question,
you're not talking to me, right? So I think those things just really resonated, and it really helped, like, build out, like, yeah, he's the greatest athlete this country's ever seen, but how can we take those experiences with other athletes, you know, where some are, they value the weightlifting a little bit more than they did the swimming. So how did we make that work so that the swimming wasn't compromised? Or, you know, just understanding, giving them what they're ready to do when they're ready to do it. So you don't break them and they hate the weight room. You know, because swimming as a sport is generally, kids are intimidated to go into the weight room. Right. And I didn't want that. I wanted all of our 18-year-olds, when they left Baltimore and were going to a college setting, so whether it was Texas or USC, Cal Berkeley, Florida, all the places we sent them, like, when they walked in there, their strength coach knew, hey, this kid's understand. I can show them a card and they kind of can go through it. And number two, they weren't intimidated. So if they were in their training when men's wrestling was training or women's volleyball, they felt like they belonged.
Right. Yeah, I think that's a natural kind of progression for all of us, is to, you know, if you go in with just a set mindset and, you know, and fixed mentality, you're going to struggle, you know? And so over time, you know, with him specifically, you probably had to evolve. You had to create more tools in the toolbox. You had to come up with different training solutions to kind of meet different needs and then, you know, approach your own kind of, you know, not take yourself so seriously or strength and conditioning so seriously, you know, to where, you know, it's not this perfect blend. It's an art. And I think that's so much of, that's why it's hard to kind of evaluate us or to really define what we do, because it's just the art is in the eye of the beholder. And, you know, I think that's something that we all go through as coaches. You know, you mentioned earlier, you know, the shopping cart with med balls and jump ropes, you know, and we laugh, but it's, you know, that's not atypical of what some weight rooms still look like for swimming across the country, you know, and a lot of times, even in the college setting, we stick a football strength coach working with swimming, you know, we stick a baseball strength coach working with swimming, where they don't have a really good understanding of what's going on. I mean, what needs to change, you know, and part of your role there, but what needs to change when it comes to, you know, swimming, strength and conditioning development?
You know, the last 4 years, I would say, has been the tipping point, the evolution where enough collegiate swim coaches went into their AD's office and said, we need someone that's with us full time, because our NC2A, like our evolution is 4-year evolution. So we're not going to get, you know, the freak out of high school that, you know, can play 2 years and can go to the league, or, you know, in the NBA's case, play 1 year and be a top 10 pick in the draft. Like, we need time to develop. And so if you keep every year rotating somebody through, it's just that inconsistency. And so I would say probably the top 25, top 30 programs in our country now have full-time people. And within the last maybe 2 years, the more of them are going to like NC2As or their conference meets, and they're having these conversations on deck, like, hey, what are you doing? What's working? Like, why can't, you know, do you have this problem? And so we're really starting to own in, and you know, you'll probably touch on what's going to happen here in August, but there's more of them that have really, hey, like, if this is what I'm going to get my, you know, if this is what I'm doing for a year basis, like, I'm going to be the best at it. And we've all got our personal, so we've got guys that are awesome at teaching the Olympic lifts, and you wouldn't think, like, hey, these guys are hypermobile, like, why would you do that? But they, boom, they've dialed it in and they've had some success. You got some guys that are, they're doing velocity-based training, right? And they're, so they're like, hey, we're working on that to keep them as fresh as possible. Or we got guys doing triphasic, we got guys doing, French contrast, whatever it may be. We got people actually doing what we hear, like, basketball, football, hockey doing. We got doing swimming, and now it's just more of us like, hey, what's working? What's going on? And then I think it will start to trickle down into the high school level, like it has with all the other sports.
Right.
And we've gotten away from the gurus and the dudes on the mountaintops with the, hey, like, they need to be, you know, if you're going to have them do a dumbbell snatch, they got to be on a physio ball, or, you know, this, if you, or stand there like belittling the people that are having their kids like push some serious weight, you know, or pull some serious weight off the floor. And they're like, oh, it's an archaic program, you're killing the kid. But their kids are winning NC2A titles. I don't think they're killing them.
No.
You know?
Right.
So we've kind of gotten those out of the sport of swimming for the most part. So it's, we kind of almost got like a formal education process now.
Well, you and I we've talked about this quite a bit offline, and we've decided to take action on it. We're gonna run. We partnered with USA Swimming Play did, in running the first swim mastermind in Woodstock, Georgia. It's gonna be August 5th. Keenan's gonna be speaking. He's gonna be speaking on the quadrennial plan. We have Kat from Georgia. We have Jada Mayo from Richmond. We have Jason Deerking from Louisville, all coming in, taking an aspect of the annual plan, you know, fall, spring, and summer. And then, you know, Keenan kind of wrapping it all up into how that goes into a 4-year plan. But that was really, the genesis of Keenan and I talking at a conference, saying, you know what, let's try to make that a little bit more, organize that pool deck meeting, that NCAA's. Let's make that a little bit more organized to get a bunch of people in the room. And so if you're a swim strength coach, you really want to deep dive into programming for specifically swimming strength and conditioning, August 5th in Woodstock, go to playsummits.com, register for that. We've kept it really economically friendly, and it's just going to be a great opportunity to interact with one another. And I know I'm excited about it. I know you're excited about it as well, aren't you, Keenan?
Yeah, I'm fired up, and beyond the aspect of just being able to participate in it, what I'm excited to do is sit in the front row, middle seat, and listen to those three speak. And during every break and intermission that we have, is just going up and picking a brain from a guy that I, or gal that I've never interacted with, but I've observed their swimmers, because they're always in the top eight.
Right.
And it's just a free-flowing opportunity to get better. And you couldn't have three better speakers that kind of are going to come at it from three different angles. Jay is hands down the best guy right now at understanding general physical preparation, the base, the core, block zero, whatever your term is, your relative strength for high school kids, and what you probably should be doing with most freshmen when they come in if they have no background in any form of strength training. I mean, you look at what he did in his general physical preparation for Townley Haas, sent him last year to Texas. The kid won an NC2A title, broke the NC2A record as a freshman, and then made the Olympic team, was an Olympic gold medalist on the 4x2 relay. So that's, you talk about long-term athletic development and handing it over the way you should hand it over. It's awesome. This year he sent a kid to the University of Michigan, Big Ten champ in the 400 IM. Like, it's, you can't deny those facts. And then Kat is she wouldn't be the godfather, so she'd be the godmother of kind of strength training for swimming. I mean, she was at the University of Indiana, and two or three of her GAs have gone on to be successful at the collegiate level. She's a competitive, I believe she was a national champion. Like, that's living. Like I said, like, if you haven't been under a bar, like, you can't talk about,
right.
Like, and Georgia, I mean, the Georgia program is just
volumes. Yeah.
And then Jason, up at Louisville, I mean, they were a non-funded, it's kind of like your story at University right. of South Florida. I mean, they were a non-funded program in 2009, and they're one of five NC2A programs that's had an individual champ each of the last 6 years.
Wow.
And that's him just coming in and just saying, like, we're going to do with what we got. We're not getting the best athletes, but I'm gonna create the most durable and the most resilient so that they can do what the coach wants them to do, and just killing it. Had an Olympian for the first time last year in the United States, and this year at NC2A's, his girl tied Katie Ledecky in the 200 freestyle, which was,
wow,
which was huge. So,
yeah.
I think we're gonna have a lot of the other coaches that, you know, they're attending. So if you're young or if you're old, like, you're never too. Your program's never perfect, that you don't need to continue to start learning, right?
Great. Well, August 5th, playsummits.com, man. We end the show with some resources, so give us the best piece of coaching advice you ever received.
It's pretty funny. I'll use it from John Urbanchek. And last week, Michael Phelps kind of echoed it at the American College of Sports Medicine. He spoke there, and it's, work still works. And doesn't mean like the 60-minute circuits that pound you, but it means like, what are you doing to build your knowledge base? What are you doing to build your team in terms of like, hey, do we have the right nutritionist working with us? And then when you get after to meat and potatoes of it, like, I still got to work, man.
Right? That's exactly
so
right.
He said it, and it was like, at first you just thought about the volume, but it was like, man, like, if you're no longer attending conferences, if you're no longer talking to coaches, like, you're a dinosaur, man. You're
exactly
a corpse.
Right. That's when you die. I agree with that 100%. What about a book, app, website recommendation?
I'm trying to think. So the book I'm reading right now is Black Box Thinking, and that's how we learn from mistakes. A colleague of mine that works for the San Antonio football club, the soccer club, kind of
yep.
sent it to me. And, I was thinking, like, how can we, even though we won the most medals that we've won in a long time at the last Olympics, how can we not leave any more on the table, or how can we start changing our thinking? And I thought that was, it's been really, really impactful. In terms of a strength training book, you know, pick your poison, whatever you're really working on. Like one thing that I try and do every year is kind of go back and look at a specific domain. So last year leading up to Rio, we had opportunity we got a grant, and like, I was like, what can we bring in? And I've got a lot of older athletes. And so I really dialed in on velocity based training. So a lot of stuff that Dr. Brian Mann and the guys overseas that use the Gym Aware. So I just try and spend every year, like going back and looking at a big picture thing. So it's kind of pick your poison.
It's good.
You know, HRV for training is pretty good because it's pretty cheap. If you want to use heart rate variability, the Under Armour MyFitness app, because it's a pretty all-encompassing. So especially if you're at a setting where, you know, a smaller Division I school or D2, D3, or you're in a club setting like I was at Baltimore, and you're trying to, like, get as much of the information on a daily basis in domains, you know, you can get daily weigh-ins. You know, you get their very basic sleep, and you kind of get nutrition. And it's very basic, but at least it's giving you something.
Yeah.
And then it also, it's got an activity tracker too, so those would probably be the two that I would say, you know, I think can hit the masses, whether it's the elite level or down.
Any websites?
Websites? God, you know, I think, I know we all say this, like, social media can be a blessing and a curse, but, you know, you see, I try and always follow more than I have more followers. And, you know, like I see something like you interview a coach, I'll go to their webpage or, God, you see like the stuff that the guys are doing down at Altus or, you know, just the conscientious coaching information that Brett's putting out there. And so again, it's like, I don't have one specific website that I go to every time, but, you know, I use social media in a focused standpoint. You know, Tim Gabbett's acute to chronic workload ratio, so it kind of leads you down rabbit holes.
Yeah,
that's how I use.
That's me too.
Instead of just, I almost think like websites are going to start to become dead and non-existent, right? Because it's people are putting it out there, and then they got links to their like either book or their kind of not podcast, but like their seminars, right?
Right. Sure. So yeah, I think social media is such a great aggregator, especially if you're following the right people. And I like that. Follow more people than following you. I like that a lot.
And you you kind of, again, you're just such a pioneer in so many ways, and some of the people that you've had on here, you always said like, when are you gonna have enough confidence to kind of reach out to I remember you when you were up at Eastern. I mean, I just was like, this guy's never met me. I work swimming, but I'm gonna throw him an email and see if like, hey, can I come up, because I really like what you're doing. And it never worked out because it was always holiday season. You're going back to see your family, but you were like, yeah, sure, man. If you're ever in town and I'm in town, let's meet up. And
absolutely.
I think you just got to have that courage as a young or even an old to reach out to that person. And it's amazing how many more in the profession are willing to share information. You know, if you ask a directed question, like if you ask Ron, if someone sends you an email and be like, tell me what it was like working for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, you're gonna be like, it's great, man. It's the NFL, right? Like,
Right.
Like,
yeah, you want to back ask good questions. You ask questions that are going to generate a response somehow, some way. And a lot of times now, I mean, I'll either do a voice message back to you. Sometimes that's just easier than typing for me. But at the same day, I get probably 50 emails a day that are questions about various different things. And the guy that's asking me how to jump higher, and the guy that's asking me, you know, about a specific question, about a specific topic, I'm usually going to want to answer that question as opposed to how do I jump higher, you know, or how do I bench more or whatever it may be. And, well, man, you've one of the things that has always resonated with me about you is the fact that you are that lifelong learner, that you're a guy that has, like you said, has proven and had results at the highest level. But you've constantly searched for continuous answers, but you've never kind of been the guy that's on the mountaintop pounding your chest saying it's been because of me or, or whatever, you know, and you've always kept this humility about yourself, despite the fact that you're constantly walking around, you know, some of the greats. And so I appreciate that about you. I appreciate what you're doing with USA Swimming right now. And I'm super excited about our conference on August 5th, man.
Yeah, it's going to be a blast. And thanks so much for kind of taking that plunge and taking this unique niche sport and saying, let's see if we can't educate coaches.
Appreciate you being on the show, brother.
Thanks so much.
That's it for this episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk. Thanks to this week's guest, as well as our sponsors, for bringing this episode to you for free. Make sure to check out ronmckeefrey.com, where you can join our mailing list, find the show notes, including all the links and resources mentioned, and information about Coach McKeefrey's other products. While you are there, please join Coach McKeefrey in the comments section thanking our guest for sharing. If you haven't subscribed to Iron Game Chalk Talk on YouTube or iTunes yet, make sure to do so. Comments, ratings, and reviews are always welcome. Coach McKeefrey can be found on Twitter at @rmckeefrey. On Facebook and YouTube at @ron.mckeefrey. That's it for this week. Be sure to check back next week for another great episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk.